Get ready to aim true and hit that target with the Bowman Podcast. Join us as we dive deep into the world of archery, hunting, and all things outdoors. Whether it's tracking down that elusive elk, bagging a trophy buck, or honing your skills at the gym, we've got you covered. With decades of experience, we're not just talking the talk, we're walking the walk. So, lock and load.
Locked and loaded.
Because we're not just aiming for the bullseye, we're hitting it dead center. Get ready for laughs, camaraderie, and a whole hell of a lot of testosterone. The Bowman Podcast, where the hunt never ends, and the stories are always legendary. And now your hosts, Paul Romano Jr., Troy Forrester, and Cedric O'Hara.
All right, good evening, everyone. We're here with Brian Poe for Vantage Point Archery. Hey, Brian, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, thank you guys for having me. Appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. We got Mr. Troy Forrester here.
How's everybody doing?
Yeah, we're doing good. And you got that nice new sweatshirt on.
Yeah.
Beautiful.
Stand up.
See, look at that. Nice. It's got your name. I thought about putting a number on the back, but, you know, we went with your last name. How about that?
Yeah. It works.
It works is right. Well, we're here. We're back in our Broadhead Brotherhood and our Broadhead Bonanza, talking about broadheads here for the past couple weeks and really trying to put some highlights out on some younger companies out there that have been grinding and working hard, American Main Products. And we got in touch with Brian and the team over there at Vantage Point, and your products are pretty impressive. You know, we just really want to get to know you and what you're about and what sets you apart from some of the other competition out there. And, you know, let's start with that. So let's give a little bit of history about yourself. So, you know, obviously been around for a while. So how did you get into the industry and what brought you to where you are today?
Yeah. You know, it's funny here in Indiana, in the Midwest, a lot of deer hunters, a lot of bow hunters. I didn't have a dad to put me into the bow hunting side of things. So I kind of picked it up from friends, fathers and friends. Started when I was 13. I'll be 53 this year. So it'll be my 39th season in Indiana whitetail hunting this fall. So along that path, you really find out how much you don't know. You screw up a lot of stuff along the way, and then you cultivate that and you manifest the good out of it then, you know, and then you are more successful and you know, you learn a lot along the way for sure. So, that's all I do. I bow hunt whitetails. I don't turkey hunt. I've never been out west hunting, although I could have opportunities there this year to do some elk hunting.
There you go.
I just vertical bow only for me. I've gun hunted in the past. I have no problem with it. It's just, there's something about chasing whitetails with a bow that to me, there's nothing like it. And, I realized that when the first year I gave up gun hunting, I just said, you know what, I'm going bow only. And opening weekend of firearm season, and I had what turned out to be a 160-inch beautiful 9-pointer at 70 yards out of bow range. And just walked by just as beautifully as could be. And I'm going, you know, I could have popped that deer with a rifle so easily. But that almost strengthened my resolve more to say, all right, I don't care. I'm not going to go grab the gun just to kill something. I want to wait for him to get close, or I want to move in and get closer to him and pattern him, and which it didn't happen, but it's just that chase. I just love the chase of bow hunting.
Absolutely. I think we're all there, right, Troy?
Oh yeah. I was just sitting there thinking like that really is what, you know, triggers some of us. And I say it all the time on this podcast, you know, just go with us and experience that feeling, you know, just like you said, you know, that beautiful buck walked by at 70 yards and it, instead of, you know, frustrating you or triggering, you know, which in the moment you might have been frustrated. We all probably would have been frustrated. But then when you look back on it, it just strengthens that desire, you know, to perfect what you are doing. You know, okay, if that's where he walked tonight, let me get closer for tomorrow night or whatever the case may be.
Yeah. So you learn something.
It grows. Yeah. It always changes and grows.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Awesome. So how did that evolve into broadhead making?
You know, it's funny because when I started too in 1985, we shot with fingers, mm-hmm. we shot 50 pound bows with 50% lead off. Didn't know any better.
Yep.
You know, I do remember when I first started going after about a half dozen arrows going, my fingers are going to fall off. You know, just a lot of pain and you don't know where to hold anyway. You're way too high and you learn it's, you know, proper technique and all. But it evolved with, we used arrows back then that were your XX75 camel hunters or your game getters. Mm-hmm. And when I look at the specs now of those arrows and I look at the Bear Razor heads and those wikis we use, 150, 160 inch heads, we were pushing 500 grains with those bows and didn't know it. We didn't know heavy or light. We didn't know yep. FOC. We just shot what we had. But I'll tell you the one thing we didn't have issues with, and that was penetration. We really didn't. Yep. Good, sharp, fixed heads, what turned out to be heavy arrows, but we didn't know any better. Heavy-ish anyway, not compared to some people now. But penetration just wasn't an issue. And, you know, we got in there deep and typically passed through. And so I got on the light and fast thing for a while too. You know, as I went through, I thought, you know, let's give this a try. Pretty much everybody has. And whether they're still on it and they're successful, hey, that's great. I had some issues over about a 5-year period with them. I had two issues. One was a beautiful buck that I lost, and it was completely due to my setup. I'm 100% sure of that. And I decided, you know what, I'm going back to the fixed blade head. So started doing some, get on the Google machine, and I'm like, I want a one-piece fixed blade head, no moving parts, no replaceable blades. And I'm just Googling and Googling. And finally, I scroll and VPA, Vantage Point Archery. And I find out it's 45 miles from my house. Now, this is 5 years ago. Never heard of it. And I'm like, why haven't I heard of it? Are they bad? Or is the company just not real good at marketing yet? Well, it turned out that they really didn't have a marketing person at that time. A few years ago, they hired one. Alex Christensen has done a ridiculously great job of pushing our brand and getting us out there. And, you know, attending trade shows and everything has helped as well, and TAC events. And so I signed on. I went over to the shop, was really impressed with the product. Came back. I tested it head-to-head with a lot of broadheads, a lot, through bone, through OSB, distance, with field points. I tuned them. And VPA just really stood out to me. And plus, it was close to home. I thought, you know what, let's give them a shot. They're close to home, mm-hmm. local company. Let's see what they've got. And so I came on board as a field staff member. And I did that for about four seasons, had really good success with the heads. And then just last October is when I came on as a sales rep for VPA. So it kind of just evolved to using a product to offer me a job. And here I am 5 months later.
That's awesome.
Nice. Yeah.
That is awesome. So what broadhead lured you towards them? What really sold it for you?
It was a single bevel. And it was okay. The 100 and 150 grain three blade were really the first ones that caught my attention. They spun true. Through torture testing, they held the edge so well. I was just shocked. I was really, really surprised. They sharpen well. You know, now the high carbon, you know, Rockwell is about 52. The S7 mm-hmm. tool steel is 56, 58. So they're hard. But sharpening takes some patience. If you think you're going to do it in 2 minutes, I think you might have a little bit of an issue. Personally, if you can sharpen something that quick, I don't know how you're going to retain that edge very well, you know, if you happen to hit some hard stuff. So it's just a great balance of hardness there with the ability to sharpen and maintain that edge. So, yeah, the first one I shot was 100 grain three blade, and that little thing just flew like a dart. I thought, man, that's nice. And I always shot 100, nice. 125 grain heads for years anyway. And then went to the 150, and I thought, I'm going to try some heavier stuff. And then at the end of it, I ended up with a 200 grain single bevel. I do have a long draw length. I'm 31 and a half inches, and I still shoot
20
pounds. So I generate a lot of energy, and all of it. I want all of it. I know it might sound selfish, but.
And you're limited on bow choice too.
You can shoot 60 pounds and but you know what? I'm limited on bow choices because of my draw length.
Yep.
So when I get into it, I want to shoot as much energy as I can, as long as I can still pull that thing, you know, and get it back with deer within 15, 18 yards. And I still can, I'm okay with it. That won't be the case forever. I understand that, but I'm going to utilize it while I can. Now, I will say this, though. 2 years ago, I did. I tuned a bow, got it set up, and it was 62 pounds. And I blew through a big mature doe first week of October, just like you would at a heavier weight. And razor sharp broadhead was the key.
Nice.
Yeah.
Excellent. So are you a solid fan or a vented fan?
Solid.
Solid.
Yep. Solid. Vented, I think sometimes a little easier to tune or a little louder,
mm-hmm.
you know, how that is, but I don't know, something about just not seeing holes in my blades, I appreciate. And I don't care how strong they are and how well they're made. There's just something about that solid blade to me. It just gives me that confidence.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So now I also see that there's a custom test pack on here that they have. You can get, it looks like you can get one of each. And whatever grain you want on here, create your own 3-pack of broadheads. So this is a pretty different scenario I haven't seen out there from many manufacturers, because you can buy one, you can, you know, test it, or they'll send you a pack, but to really mix and match the different head availability from what you have to offer is pretty sweet in regards to that as a consumer, because you can, you know, you're spending what you would spend for pretty much economy, you know, same as every other brand out there in regards to price structure, but you get to try what you like and then run it through the rigor and then go from there. You're not committed to a 3-pack of it. So that's pretty ingenious. I don't see many other people doing that.
Yeah. Thank you. That was something that I believe they started doing before last season, right before I started working for VPA. But yeah, I just thought it was a great idea myself. I'm a tinkerer and I love to, mm-hmm. I have this hobby, and I will buy used bows, maybe 3-year-old flagship bows, get a good deal. I bring them home, take them out of the box. I tune them up. I get them shooting well. I shoot them for a month or two, and then I sell them.
Yep.
And I'll grab another one. And I do the same thing with broadheads. Hey, what broadhead will shoot well out of this bow? And is it like 3-blade? Is it like this? And it also gives me conversation points that people ask. Hey, have you ever tried this? As a matter of fact, I have. And I shot that exact bow with it or something similar. And it just kind of, I don't know, it ups my education level as far as that goes. When you're tinkering a lot and you're tuning, you can have intelligent conversations. I've had a couple with Tim Gillingham at ATA, and you better be on point when you're talking to Tim, because he knows a lot about tuning bows.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, you can at least speak intelligently and understand what's going on and offer some thoughts as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah. Yep.
So what have you found in regards to broadhead flight? So I found that I own an archery shop. I test broadheads all the time, different bows and everything. There are just, and some people don't believe this realm of thinking, but there are just some broadheads that bow just does not like for whatever reason. And you could spend hours messing with your arrow configuration, your fletching configuration, your tune, even paper tuning out to 50, 60, 70 yards to get your straight flight. Like there's so many things. And sometimes it just doesn't do it. And then you put it in another bow and it flies like a dream. So, you know, have you experienced that in your tinkering?
I'm not going to name the competitor, but there was one other broadhead that I have tinkered with before I started working here. It's been a while ago. And then the VPAs, and those two I've had no problem with out of several bows. We've tuned those. I've got 3 boys and my son-in-law, and let's see, between PSE, Hoyt, Matthews, Bowtech, and Elite, we've had no issues tuning VPAs out of that. And that's awesome. Everything from 200 grain 3-blade, our Omega single bevel 150 grain, and then, so 150, 200, and 175 grains. We've tuned beautifully to fly with field points out to 60 and hit with them. But I will say this, I completely agree with what you're saying with certain bows being, I don't know if the bow's more finicky or if it's just the whole package. Because
yeah.
You think about it, if you make one little tweak to your three twists in your string, you're going to change your draw length maybe an eighth of an inch. And if you shoot enough, you can feel that. It's just mm-hmm. a different anchor point. Your bow is going to behave differently. Your string may not be right behind the center of the arrow, getting that power stroke, you know, right where you want it to be. And sometimes I wonder if people give up, you know, they just try a head and it's like, this is my setup and it doesn't matter the head. I didn't fly right and I'm done. it can take a lot. It can take a lot of work, but there's something rewarding about it. Like when you get it, like, oh, I got it. And it can be frustrating too. And sometimes they do take longer than others. Absolutely. Oh, yeah. I've seen that out of sharpening as well. You take one broadhead and it sharpens up beautifully and you're popping hair and splitting paper and you put it aside and you do the next one. It's like, this thing will not. So you put it aside and you do the next one and go back and work on that one later, you know? Yep. And I've seen that with different brands. It's just, you think about the hardness and the angle and sometimes it might just be the operator. But there are variables in everything, you know, bow hunting and archery is such a, gosh, the variables just this much means a ton.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely. And I think that's where people fall into the, I guess the word of choice would be luxury of mechanicals is that they're a smaller package, they're condensed, they're more in line with the arrow. So obviously they're going to fly like field points, right? So it's pretty common sense. All that weight is dead in the center. So, and you don't have any variance until they open or deploy. So it's pretty easy just to screw them on and go hunting. But what you lose in that, in regards to knowledge, not only in regards to penetration or kinetic energy or you know, even accuracy, is the knowledge of how to get it there. Right. And you may think your bow is set up perfectly, you know, beyond belief. And then you go shoot a fixed blade broadhead and it's, meow, poop, you know, and it's like, well, what happened? It must be the broadhead. Well, no, it's probably you didn't tune your bow a certain way in order to do that. But
yeah, a lot of variables. And you know, something else really quick to touch on that more. I think people really do themselves a disservice when they don't insert tune. So they just glue the insert in a hunting arrow and just go to town. You know, there's tolerances and variation in the shaft, tolerances, variation in the insert, and tolerances, variation in the broadhead. So when you stack those up, let's say all three were run at their worst condition, but still acceptable to a blueprint, you're talking about shooting at 60 yards, you know, you can have some issues. So I think that's where some of it comes in, is kind of a tolerance stack up of, you know, the whole thing put together. A lack of knowledge about tuning and what it really takes to do it, you know, and get everything dialed in right. Mm-hmm. And another thing to remember too is, if I put a broadhead on an arrow and I shoot at a target and I want that thing to hit point of aim, point of impact at say 60 yards, and I'm grouping well, but I'm all one direction, I can work with that.
Oh yeah.
If I've got one right, I've got one low, and I've got one high, and I got a problem.
Yeah.
And I need to figure it out. That's a bad problem. Yeah.
I tell people that all the time in the shop. I'm like, a group I can fix. If you're all over the place, I can't help you. You know, we got to start from the drawing board.
But shotgun, won't you take that shotgun pattern?
Yeah. Yeah. Doesn't work out of a bow. But do you mind diving a little bit deeper into the insert tuning and arrow tuning, and how would someone, like, you know, we have thousands of people that watch us every week. So what would someone who's watching this the first time, they have their arrows cut to their length, they have their inserts, they're sitting there watching this podcast, just about to glue them in, and they go, oh crap. What would you say to them at that point in time to do?
Yeah, I would say, first of all, don't be married to an arrow length specifically. Some people are like, I shoot 29 inch arrows. Well, why?
No. Yeah.
Have you tried 29 and a quarter? Have you tried 30? I would always, you know, when I've done a lot of tinkering, is I'll start out there maybe an inch and a half or two beyond where I like to go. And then you can always trim some off. You can't put material back on. So arrow length, depending on dynamic spine, can vary, you know, off that bow. There's so many variables to it. And then when you add in, you know, the threads that are inside of an insert, if you just think about if that is put at, let's say, two tenths of a degree, you know, a half degree. If those threads are crooked when they're put into that insert, there's going to be run out. And people automatically, no matter what the head, they go, oh, that's a broadhead. These things, they don't spin true. You know, so what we are developing actually at VPA is we've got our own spinner we're selling now. We sold out of our first batch quick.
Oh, wow.
We also want to come up with a precision rod that's threaded. And we know that's precise, right on the money, that we can actually sell or send with that. Put your broadhead on it, spin it to that. And then, you know, if you spin it on your arrow with an insert, then you've got an insert arrow problem. And basically the insert tuning to me is just spinning it until it spins true. So don't glue it in, put it in, spin it on the spinner. If you have a little run out, turn it a quarter turn, try it again. and make sure you mark it. And then what I like to do when I tinker a lot is hot glue. I can always take that back out again if I want to permanently glue it for a hunting setup. Some people use hot melt too for hunting. That's fine. I prefer to weld that sucker in there. I want to make sure it does not come out. Again, I don't like variables. I want this thing to be rock solid. I'm already going to fail sometimes. I'm human. I'm going to screw things up. I don't want my equipment to screw up. I want there to be no excuses except, hey, dummy, you messed up. It wasn't your equipment. You torqued the bow, buck fever, you punch the trigger, whatever it is. I want it to be me and not my equipment. So
I agree.
Yeah, I would say don't shortchange yourself with your setup. Experiment. You know, one setup might be a 30-inch arrow, you know, with a 3-blade head, another one a 2-blade, a single bevel might work better with a 29.5-inch arrow. And I'm just obviously throwing numbers out there, but be patient with it. You know, even tuning your bows, it can take weeks sometimes to get them dialed in. Don't try to get it all in one afternoon. You know, keep plugging away, shooting different conditions. Sometimes you're stressed, sometimes you're more relaxed. Make sure your grip is being replicated. You guys know there's so much to this, and I know that blows people's mind and it might intimidate some people, but it's how you learn. It's how you learn. Take some time, take notes. I've got notebooks of things. And some of it, when I go back and read, it's like, man, that is crazy that that setup wouldn't work, you know, very well out of that bow. I couldn't get it to tune very well. And then this other one did.
Yeah. I think that's a good point there is like, you know, we're all students of the craft, you know, if you will. I mean, just like, you know, you and Paul both have a wealth of knowledge and experience. I myself am still newer into archery and still newer into everything. So he's sitting there saying, you know, the people are at home putting their arrows together. And I'm like, shoot, that's me. I'm sitting on the podcast with you. Like, I needed to start taking notes, but at least it's recorded, you know, so I can watch it back. But it is exactly what you said, though, because I can go out there and shoot and shoot and shoot, say, you know, today, and everything's flying true and I'm happy and nothing changes on the bow. And I go out there and try and replicate exactly what I did tomorrow. And who knows, I might be off to the right just a little bit every single arrow, you know, or high or low or whatever. And then, like you said, when you stretch out the yardage, it just amplifies those little issues.
Yeah.
So it is it is such a minute, you know, fine line tinkering game to learn all those issues and learn how to correct them is more important. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And I would add to that too, with, you know, when you mentioned yardage, I used to be the guy that, you know, when I prep for deer season, as long as I'm hitting my 4-inch circle, 35 yards, I'm happy. And my youngest son started shooting distance. He's back at 60 yards. I'm going, what are you doing? It's a waste of time. Have you tried it? And I said, no, it's a waste of time. Now this is 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. I never shot distance. And then I tried it. And then I was humbled. So what I would recommend too is, don't do it right away because you probably get discouraged and quit. But when you get a decent amount in that 20 or 30 yard range and you feel like you're pretty confident, start backing up a little bit and work your way back to that 40, 50, 60 yard range. And when you can start to shrink those groups, man, your 15, 20 yard hunting shots are easy. I mean, they're a breeze.
Right.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Yep.
So one thing also that I want to say, and I know we're talking broadheads and stuff, but a lot of things, it's no matter what broadhead company you have, and we've talked about this just 2 minutes ago, a lot of times it's not the broadhead. That's the problem. It's you, it's the bow, or it's your setup. So I see people all the time that come in and they're like, I want this arrow. And that's when I giggle to myself and they kind of look at me funny and they're like, well, why are you laughing at me? I'm like, nothing. Don't worry. I'm like, where's your bow? Well, I left it at home. Well, how do you say you want that arrow and you don't even have your bow with you? Like, you know, I need to know what weight you're at. I need to know your draw length. Exactly. Well, I'm this and this. I'm like, but I don't know that. And then you're going to miss and then, or something's going to be off. You're going to have a hard time tuning and then it's going to be my fault. Right. So do your local tech or yourself a favor. Like it starts with your draw length. Like get your draw length exact. Every bow is different. Every bow is completely different. Get your draw length to where you feel comfortable. Then it's poundage. Get your poundage to where you're comfortable. Then obviously build your setup. But then it's the arrow. Like that bow needs to make love with that arrow in order to fly straight. And it has to be, it's a mathematical equation. And some bows just, Matthews like weaker arrows. It's a known fact. Like you could shoot a 350 spine Matthews out of an 80 pound Matthews. It's going to work. We've proven it. You can do it. You know, prime, you're not going to do it. No way. If you're not shooting a 250 or a 235, you're not getting it to tune. You know, so there's different things out there that you have to know. But just because you saw on TV that this person shoots Easton 6.5s and you want to shoot them, that doesn't mean that your setup's going to like that arrow. So be open to what is there. And not only that, but like you said, I think the misconception out there is arrow length. You know, I always tell people the standard out there is an inch shorter than your draw length if you're using an outsert. So if you're shooting a 29-inch draw, you should have a 28-inch arrow. You have an outsert. You know, it'll be a little bit longer if you're doing an insert. But that's just a starting point. Yeah. Like, you know, it might tune better at 3/4. It might be tuned better at 1 1/4. Like, we don't know that. So we're going to start a little bit long and then work it back and see what works for you. Yes. And then there's the, you know, I want to tweak with broadheads. And then, you know, you can tweak with broadheads, but I've been doing it for the past 5 weeks here on this broadhead bonanza that we're doing. We're going through, we're trying all different broadheads. We're testing them. We're shooting them. I mean, each time I've had to completely change my bow setup for each one just because it's not the same.
Right.
Everything's different. I had to drop, you know, grains. I had to make larger fletching. I had to do 3 fletch. I had to do 4 fletch. I had to change my rest. I had to, you know, I'm sitting there for weeks trying to get it to fly to perfection. And then I fly to perfection. And then what happens? It drops 30 degrees. You know, your strings shrink. And then all of a sudden you have to start all over again. So there's so many variables out there, which leads me, and I'm coming full circle here, promise, is you got to shoot all the time. Even if it's 2 arrows a day, 3 arrows a day. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember what I was listening to. I think I was listening to an old like T-Bone show or something from a couple years ago. And he was like, when you walk to your car, shoot your bow, shoot 3 hours into the target, put your bow down, go to work, leave everything there, come home, pull in the driveway, go pull the arrow, shoot another 3 arrows, and then go inside. Like, you know, you got to have that repetition, and people just wait so long to do it. Yeah. And then, you know, the people that come in the shop, they're coming in now getting ready for elk season, whitetail season. They're looking at me like, no, I'm crazy. I'm like, no, I love you. Like, you're doing it the right way. Like, you're spending that time, you're getting your reps in. You know, it's the worst thing that can happen is you shoot through your strings and we got to replace them. Big deal. Yeah. Like, there's nothing there. But, you know, don't commit to a certain thing just because someone else shoots it. You got to commit to what works in your environment. And it's hard to say that, right? You know, you all sell broadheads, so you know we want everyone to purchase your broadhead. So it's hard to say, like, you know, don't commit to one thing when you're a retailer and you're selling, or merchandiser and you're selling a certain thing. But that's why you have options as a producer and a manufacturer. It's not like you're producing 100-grain 3-bread broadhead and that's all we got. You know, it's like I'm on your site right here. And I mean, you got everything up to 300-grain broadheads.
You got 70 out there. 76 SKUs.
And you know, there's,
you know what? And if you call the shop, not one person there will say, you need to shoot our flagship Omega head in this grain. Yeah. Like, what's your setup like? What are you hunting? How far out are you shooting? Our customer service is great like that. So they will walk through that with you and get you an answer. If the person on the phone doesn't know, they will get back with you and let you know.
Awesome. Yeah. And that's the way it should be, because, you know, you're not selling one certain thing. Right. There's plenty of options under there. As long as you're on the umbrella and it works for you, that's all that matters.
Yeah.
And that's what has drawn me to you all and having you on and wanting to talk to about Vantage Point and the history and everything going on about it is, you know, there's not many companies out there doing what you all are doing and on this scale. You know, there's a couple out there that compete. But I mean, it's the options are just, I mean, I just keep scrolling through and every time I click on something, there's something new.
Yeah. And there are more on the way too. So I can't say much, but there's more coming. So,
I mean, you have a 300-grain 2-blade single bevel head. Like what, like, man, where were you moose season? Like
big game hunters in Africa. Yeah. We've sold those to those people. Yeah.
Yeah, like
they get their 700-800-grain setups.
It's unbelievable.
Yeah,
it's certainly unbelievable.
Yeah, they're cool looking too. They're big heads.
Oh yeah, yeah, they're pretty sweet. So, what is it? And maybe this is just just lack of knowledge on my point. So when it comes to two blade broadhead and their single bevel, I've noticed pretty much everybody has, and maybe I'm using the wrong verbiage here, but almost like a tonto tip, like it's more square, like it's not pointy. It doesn't look like it's going to penetrate anything. It's like it's almost blunt. Is that because the two opposing angles are coming down like this, creating an offset point in some way? Or you know, explain that a little bit if you have any
background. Exactly. Our typical single bevel actually has more of a blunt tip. Mm-hmm. And we have blown through. I've got pictures of shoulder blades that we have just blown through like the deer wasn't there with those. So those act almost to me as a blunt force trauma, you know, to the bone. And then the single bevel just splits it. And again, I've got pictures of that where shoulder blades are just pried apart. They're literally at an angle. You can see where it's pried. And but then like our Omega actually has the tonto tip, which has been proven as a penetrator. And it is the opposing, I don't know if you can see it there, the opposing angles where they come together. The beautiful thing about our Omega head is it's patent pending. A couple things about this. Number one is the first about third of the head is actually like a traditional double bevel. And then the back two thirds is a single bevel. So you get that initial push, that initial penetration, and you get that rotation through the cavity, through the tissue. You also get a wedge in the opposite way. So when you go to 90 degrees from the blade, you actually have a wedge that pries everything apart. And these things, this 200 grainer I used on my buck this past year, they get dirty because they blow through whatever you shoot them with. I was amazed. But the coolest feature of it is if you notice the ferrule, that angle matches the blade.
Oh, yeah.
So that's a patented technology. It's called lay flat. So one of the issues with single bevel heads, two blade heads, was sharpening them. A lot of people have issues. They didn't want to buy a fixture. You can take this and just like the name implies, lay flat, put it on a stone, match it up to the ferrule. You can push it, pull it, circular. We've had people do it different ways. And then that is all one edge right there.
Yeah, it's all like one plane. Yeah.
Because I know usually you got to go around the round hump because they want all the weight down the center, like a shaft going through. Now this is almost like a built-in guide.
Absolutely. So I just use what I've got here, about an 8-inch piece of shaft.
Yeah.
And I just work it on a stone, sandpaper, whatever one you use. And it doesn't take much though and gets those things really, really sharp. And the cool thing is too, our designer, actually, if you look at the backside too, try to keep it in focus, the backside, you can actually put a micro bevel on as well. So typically single bevels, one side, and you might knock the burr off the back, and that's all you get. You can flip this over and drag it slowly and get a micro bevel on the backside as well. And they perform well. Again, I've got pictures after I've shot through my deer this last year. I would have taken that Omega and put it back in my quiver as it sat after I shot my deer. I wouldn't have had to touch it up at all. I wouldn't do that. I will touch it up for the quiver, but it was sharp enough that ethically I could have hunted with it again. Absolutely.
Nice.
That's awesome. So that one solves the problem of sharpening. Also gives you kind of the traditional a single or a double bevel at the front, single bevel at the back. So you get that rotation through the cavity, make those S cuts, and the penetration is just like no other.
Well, correct me if I'm wrong, but it almost looks like the way the head is, it creates almost like a blade in the front. I mean, it is pointed, you know, it definitely does have a point to it, but at the same time, I would imagine that's got to help with blade retention and everything else. Like you said, if you bury it in the ground, you know, after it exits the animal.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and it's wedge on the other steel, side as well.
Yeah.
And that wedge as well on the opposite side. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah. Awesome. It's a thick one. And we have those from 125 grains. I think we sell them right now at 250. We're looking at doing them up to 350 for the Omega. So
unbelievable.
Yeah. Those have been a great seller for us.
So now I've noticed, opposed to other competitors out there, a lot of your double or dual blade, you don't use bleeders. What's the mentality behind that?
How much can I say here?
whatever doesn't get you legally or morally in trouble.
let's say that we've had bleeders requested on various broadheads of ours, and we love listening to our customers.
Yep. Great.
There you go.
But we're not going to do it. Maybe.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, we will read between the lines on that one and take it from there. Pretty sweet. Another thing that, and I'm sorry, as I'm going through, I'm looking through the website just because that's what I do. Yeah. So your three blade system, what I've noticed is different than others. And I don't know if you have one out there. If not, we can post it up in a picture that's there. It's not like a ferrule going all the way to the end like it is on the two blade. This more has like a wedge halfway down on it. So what's the reasoning? You have your three blades obviously coming to a point solid, and then halfway down the broadhead, it's like it looks like two broadheads in one on there with it. That has to do something with push power.
Yep, absolutely. And strength and integrity. Yeah. Okay. I mean, number one, you gotta have a system that's going to hold up.
Yeah.
I mean, you think about it, and I'll talk more about the three blade in a second, but it's amazing to me. We spend $1,400 on a bow and $300 on a rest and $300 on sights, and we get $250 releases and we want the best arrow and everything else. And, you know, the special inserts, and we go, well, let's just put a $10 head on the end of it. And it's like,
yeah. Or 25-cent insert.
That is the part. That is the most important part of that system. Yep. After the arrow leaves your bow doesn't mean squat anymore. It's the broadhead touching that animal. That is it. So it's mind blowing to me that people skimp on the broadhead, you know? So, yeah, that's part of it, though, is that structural integrity of the three blade. My son blew through his buck this past year with the 200 grain three blade. 10 minutes before that, he blew through a coyote 3 yards from where he ended up shooting his buck. And he went 43 yards on a coyote and 40 on his buck, and blew through both with a 200 grain three blade. He just loves the three blade. They tune really well out of his bow. He's got a 32.5-inch draw. So you can see he's about 6'4". He's a big kid. So he creates a lot of energy. But the three blade also, you can take hours and you just lay them flat on a stone. And then those two opposing blades match the angle. So you sharpen them, just two blades, rotate it, sharpen the other two, rotate it. So there's no fixture jig or anything else required with those either.
Awesome. You want to know something really funny, Troy? They also sell first aid kits. Yeah. Well, just in case when you're taking it out. I'm sorry. That's as you were talking, I was looking through it.
Believe in the product.
Yeah.
So Vantage Point's not only a broadhead company, it's a manufacturing company too as well. You do screws and limb bolts and inserts, and
we actually, to back up, for about two decades, actually a little more, our parent company is Absolute Machining. So we're a full machine shop. So we do a little bit of everything. And then one of our machinists slash engineers, Jeff Miller, he's the one that came up with the Vantage Point archery line of broadheads. He is a trad hunter. He got kind of tired of what was on the market. And so he just went to work one day and started making his own broadheads. Family and friends caught on. Hey, can you make me some? And it kind of went from there. Some of the old ownership didn't really put much into the marketing side. So it just kind of was word of mouth. Again, our marketing person's done a great job the last few years to get us out there, you know, and more of the mainstream, more talked about with premium heads. But yeah, that's kind of where that started, the broadhead side. And then in the last year, we launched an outdoors brand as well as an armory brand. So we're making firearms accessories. We're in talks to start doing some actual firearms parts with some companies. So there's a lot of growth going on there in the machine shop itself. All of our materials are 100% sourced in the USA. We don't use any foreign material. And all of our manufacturing is done in Fort Wayne, Indiana as well. Under one. Nice.
That seems to be a recurring theme with a lot of the people we talk to, not the 100% sourced in America and everything else. That's something we love and look for, obviously. But the recurring theme I'm talking about is, you know, there's a hunter out there and they see a need or have a need for something that doesn't quite match what they want. You know, what they have was, it works, you know, obviously take a broadhead off the shelf, go shoot and it works. But like you said, that gentleman, you know, he said, well, I can do this better. You know, we have Buzzard Roost Saddles is one of our sponsors. Mm-hmm. And if you listen to that podcast, that's what he said. He's like, I think I can just do this better. You know, there's a way to do this better. And they just figure it out, you know? So it's just awesome when we talk to you know, people like yourself and companies and build those relationships of, it came out of necessity and it came out of a desire to perform better than what they had.
Yeah.
So
absolutely. Yeah. And the improvements have just been ongoing since then. You know, we make a better broadhead now than we did 2 years ago and a better one, you know, 2 years before that. And that constant improvement, you know, one of our owners say, we probably don't have the best business model. We make broadheads that last year after year. So if you want to sell a bunch of broadheads, we might not be doing it right. Yeah. But what it does is it leaves a legacy even for our kids and, you know, about durability and American made and that quality. And if you pay up for a good broadhead, you're going to be able to use that thing for quite a while. But it also puts the onus on us to come up with new stuff. All right. Maybe it's a fixed blade head that's going to last you a long time. But let's come up with new things and innovate, which, again, we do have some stuff coming, hopefully not too long in the future this year. So
great.
Yeah, that's cool. The fun part, though.
Yeah. And Troy, touching on what you said, I mean, I'm a research junkie. So like if you watch the video that Matthew's put out about Joel, like, you know, there's Matt McPherson and then there's Joel, like the hunter, the archer, the first proving ground guy. Like, you know, even he said it to the day is like, you know, he cuts his quiver with a saw and does all this stuff and take pictures and calls the manufacturer over at Matthew's and says, you need to do it like this, just prettier, like, because it works, you know, and even to this day, they're still doing that. So, you know, I think I don't want to call it like the American dream, but that's like what inspired every manufacturer, every person out there, especially in the hunting industry, right? You spend so much time using something and it's just like, you know, for years I wanted a jacket with a breast pocket so I could put, you know, just my release or my phone or something right here, you know? And then, you know, 10 years ago, they finally started making it. It's like, woo, only if I was the one that, you know, thought of that and it had the wherewithal to do that. So
missed opportunity.
Yeah. Missed opportunity. It's like I grew up, I'm a chef in the restaurant industry and I've always wanted a Lazy Susan refrigerator. Think about it. You know, like you go to the old diners, they had the cake displays that rotated. But what if you had your refrigerator and freezer that was a Lazy Susan? So you open the door and it spun and you could just spin it, push a button and it spins until
you have to edit that.
Don't
out.
Take
you
I need an NDA. We got to edit this out.
You're going to see a absolute machining making
Brian's like, Lazy Susan refrigerator. Never thought that would, that would idea. That would come of it, but there's space issues and a bunch of other stuff with that. But so what do you have on the books this year for hunting? You're just doing whitetail or?
You know, I one of our owners is actually from Utah. He's been hunting pretty much his whole life. So, they went back last year and one of the guys in their group shot a really, really great bull. So that opportunity could be there. There might be some other ones. I'm not going to say anything about them yet coming up. There was an invitation to do some turkey hunting in Tennessee. It didn't work out with my schedule. Yeah. I'm not a turkey hunter, but I thought, you know what? I can go down with my bow and chase them. And I think there's something to it. I have this personality that it's kind of addictive to where I'm afraid that once I do something like that, that I don't have time to start a new thing. And when I do something, I go in and it's dangerous. So, but the same guy, I'll probably have an opportunity to go down and deer hunt in Tennessee in November as well, third week during the rut. So, yeah, there's some opportunities there, but to me, there's this, I don't know, third week of October when it starts getting good here in Indiana, I love that time of year and I'm not home much either. So
yeah. That's a little bit of a sleeper state out there. I've driven through there a bunch of times and always see big bucks out there in the fields.
Yeah, there's, I think in the last three years, we were top three in Booners and top two in Pope and Young Bucks. Yeah.
It's coming around.
Yeah, fertile ground. We got great ground. If our DNR would do things a little differently, we could be right there. You know, we're the people that right during the rut, we allow people to hunt with rifles. And to me, shouldn't happen.
Yeah, no.
Shouldn't happen.
No. Nope. So, I agree with that one, I got to say. Yeah. You know, there's states out there that do it really well. And there's some that just don't, but
back it up to the first week of December and then we're fine. Make it one week and two weekends and I'm good with that. But Not during a rut. Not when these bucks lose their mind and mm-hmm. yeah.
Yep, it happens, but good luck changing that one. There's a lot of voting needed out there. Yep.
and I'll tell you what too. I know several guys that work for that have worked or still work for the DNR and the insurance lobbyists are relentless. Kill more deer. We're tired of the car accidents. We're tired of paying out claims. Kill more deer. Kill more deer. So there's a lot of pressure put on them.
I'm glad you brought that up. There's something that people just don't think about is how much influence those auto insurance companies have out there just because they're paying end over end, you know, for all that. So it's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, hey, you know, we need to have longer bow seasons and sell more broadheads and give us more bag limits and we'll take care of it for you. Otherwise, you know, perfect. It's not going to happen.
Yep. Absolutely. But,
bigger freezers.
Yeah.
With lazy
seasons. Oh, don't lazy talk seasons. To me. Troy, I forgot to tell you, we've been having some weird weather out here and I had to buy two extra freezers cause I got my moose last year. So I had a shit ton of moose meat and, so I got three chest freezers and then I have a refrigerator and freezer in the garage. So as a second refrigerator, we cook, we do a lot of shit. And so anyway, we had a power surge, whatever, power came back on, didn't think about it. I go out to the freezer the other day to take some meat out or whatever, and the refrigerator's gone. And in that refrigerator was all the hot dogs that you brought for me, all 40 pounds of the venison hot dog, all the venison cheddar bologna, all my elk jerky, all my ground elk meat. So all the other three freezers are fine. They never went out or whatever. So all my moose meat and all the good stuff is there. But that whole miscellaneous wild game freezer, I had bison steaks in there. Because when you came, I bought a whole bison fillet. So I chopped it up. I had filet mignon in there. I had lobster tail. Everything gone. All of it's gone. I made 50 pounds of wild game dog food. For my dogs. I'm so mad.
The dogs are happy.
The dogs are amazingly happy. I am not happy. And man, that smell. God, there is something where it's just like, oh, Jesus.
Yeah, one of my sons was doing something in his garage a few years ago, and he had killed two deer, Indiana deer season, got two, freezers packed, he's happy. Something he was doing in the garage, and I don't remember if something fell, hit the plug, unplugged his freezer. Both deer completely ruined. He went out a few days later to grab some and opened it, and almost knocked him out anyway, but... it almost liquefies on the bottom of the freezer too.
Yep.
Nasty
stuff. Like
3-4 inches.
Lost two full deer.
Ugh,
that's a lot of work.
Yeah, and then you have to wait months to fill it back up.
Yes. Yeah.
I could actually go out. What is it now? I have till the end of the month. There's still extended doe season, but I just
really
there's no cutting. You know, then you got to start cutting babies out and stuff like that. I don't. I have my limits on things. I don't need venison that much. I still got 300-400 pounds of moose meat to go through. So, but no, that was my saga. So that was fun. So now I need another refrigerator, right? Because you know, that's in there. Not to mention the beer that was lost because it was the garage fridge, you know? So there's, you know, beer and Gatorade and all that other fun stuff in there. So, you know, that was lost. So it was a cut to the soul on that one.
That's as bad as it gets.
Yeah. And it was like, oh man, I can't even, it was all like the cheddar sticks and like all the good crap was in that. Yeah. It was just, well, you know, you haven't lived till you've
we'll get some more.
Smelt a rotten venison hot dog. My lord. we'll insert smell-o-vision here with a little picture on the bottom. But no, man, Brian, we appreciate you having on. Vantage Point Archery, really great things coming out of Indiana there. A huge variety of broadheads. Check out their website. It is really something special, vpArchery.com. There's a ton of options there from glue-in to screw-in to single bevel to three-blade to vented to non-vented from a 125 grains all the way up to 300 grains, to turkey spurs. There's everything you could think of on there. And the technology keeps coming. So we're looking forward to more from you guys down the pipe. We appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Brian. It's been awesome.
Thank you guys for having me on. Can I say something really quick before?
Absolutely. Yeah.
I would just give this advice to any new people out there who are overwhelmed with the information. And, you know, the internet can be the best of things and can be the worst of things. And sure, if you're overwhelmed and I don't know what to do and heavier or lighter or an FOC and this and that, I would just encourage you to do this. Just put a good, sharp, one piece, hopefully machined in Fort Wayne, Indiana, broadhead on the front of your arrow, but put a fixed blade on the front of the arrow and just start there. If you want to tinker with inserts and you want to tinker with arrow weights and all later, that's fine. But I would just recommend remove the variables, get your bow tuned up, remove moving parts and variables. I call our heads boringly reliable. There's nothing flashy. They don't move. There's no screws. There's no this or that, but there's just nothing to worry about. And I would just encourage newbies, if you're overwhelmed and confused, yep, start there. Good solid fixed blade head and go from there.
Nice. Yeah, I mean, I would agree completely. The other part I would add to that is set up a piece of paper. You can even cut out a box and tape a piece of paper to it and run your arrow through that at, you know, 10, 20, 30 yards and make sure you're getting a bullet hole and flying straight. And it'll eliminate a lot of problems down the road. You know, even with your broadhead, paper tune with your broadhead on, send that thing right through it, see what happens, and get your setup going. But that's, you know, 90% of the battle right there is choosing a really sharp, reliable broadhead that's going to do the work for you. And let's be honest, what, 90% of the shot opportunities out there are less than 40 yards. So, I mean, even if you're not fully tuned and you're hitting reliably out there, as long as what's on the end of your arrow, like you said earlier, is reliable, consistent, solid, strong, and sharp, it's going to get the job done. So,
yeah, and out of a tuned bow, your arrow's internet animal straight, no tail whip, you got better odds for penetration. And the deeper you reach into that animal, in my opinion, the more tissue, the more organs, the more blood vessels, better off you are.
Yep. And set your arrow up and your bow up to execute on the good shots. And if it happens to be, you know, we're not preaching shoot every deer through the shoulder blade or through a leg bone or whatever, but these things can help you if you do screw up.
Yes.
And you make that mistake, then, or deer steps and it wasn't your mistake. You know, that's what happens. I've had plenty of deer take an extra step right after I punch that trigger, you know, or duck or go left or go right. But, you know, you have a little bit of that backing to save you instead of wounding that animal.
Yeah, they get a vote. They get a vote.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, they don't just stand there and say, go ahead and shoot me.
They definitely do. They definitely do. All right, everyone. Well, this is the Bowman signing off. Troy, any parting words for you out there?
Nope. Just been taking notes. I love it. It's awesome.
All right, guys. Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. It's the Bowman signing off.
You've been listening to the Bowman Podcast. Every show is a testosterone-fueled adventure. If it's archery, hunting, anything outdoors, working out, we're talking about it. Thanks for coming over. We hope you enjoyed the show. If you did, give us a like, rating, review, and subscribe to the show. Hook up with us on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube at the Bowman Podcast. Be safe out there, and we'll see you next time on the Bowman Podcast.